Welcome to Foragers Radio. Join me, your host, Neil Tenier, as we explore the natural world. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Foragers Kingdom. As always, I'm your host, Neil Tenier, and today's show is brought to you by ForagersKingdom.com. You can head over there to check out all of our sustainable mushroom extracts and other products, and as always, you can use code RADIO15 for 15% off your order. Alrighty, well, sorry if my voice sounds a little hoarse. I'm just getting over a little bit of a winter cold, and I've been putting off doing this voiceover for the episode for quite some time, so can't wait any longer. Having said that, today's show is with Florida Mushroom Company, and they're founded by a team of three cool dudes from Florida, and I had a chance to meet one of them, whose name is Patrick, and we met at the Kenneth Square Mushroom Festival this past summer. And I may have talked about the event on the show before, but if you haven't heard about it, it's a very awesome mycophiles feast festival, whatever you want to call it. And it's located just outside Philadelphia, about like an hour and a half west. And actually, a lot of people regard Kennett Square as the mushroom grow capital of the world or of the country. And that's because, yeah, they have so many mushroom cultivation operations, and they produce, you know, a large percentage of the country's mushroom supply. We're talking, you know, anywhere from like cremini and white button mushrooms and portobellas to like lion's mane and maitake and so on. So Pat and I met there, and yeah, I gave him some of our chaga tea infused with some cordyceps extract and lion's mane maybe, and he said that had him, you know, fully energized and feeling like a million bucks. So we kept in touch and we started exploring ways to kind of work together with our two companies. And eventually I was like, you know what, come on the podcast. Let's talk about what you guys have going on down in Florida, because I'm sure many of you listening kind of think, you know, when I hear Florida, I don't think about mushrooms. It's really hot down there. So trying to grow mushrooms there, you need a lot of you know, advanced cooling systems, and also you personally need a lot of, you know, oomph and conviction to like take on that endeavor. So Pat and his team, you know, they have that, and I was always impressed by what they had going on. So I had them come on the show. So we're going to unpack a lot of awesome topics about growing mushrooms in Florida, the shroom boom in Florida, the shroom boom in general. We get into the medicinal benefits of mushrooms quite a bit. So this is a fun, easy listen, and I hope you enjoy the show. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Foragers Radio. It's going to be a party, this one here. I have three founders from Florida Mushroom Co. I have Pat Sullins, Dealey Hunt, and Jesse Larson. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks for having us, Neil.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Yeah, I'm excited to geek out all about mushrooms with you guys. So yeah, let's kick it off. Maybe one of you wants to introduce Florida Mushroom Co. Tell us a little bit about the company, how you guys got started with fungi, and kind of go from there.
Well, who wants to do it? You want me to do it?
Go for it.
All right, the pressure's on here. So I think it should start with, we're all friends, and some longer than others. And I met Dealey, through college, became good friends with him. He was good friends with my wife, continued to stay friends after college. And through Dealey, really, Dealey, lived about 45 minutes from where I was. And he had this old Florida cracker house on a lake. And it was a ton of fun to go out there and fish and hang out on his beach. We had a lot of similar interests, surfing, wakeboarding, hunting, fishing, all that fun stuff. And he had a great location for it and a great party beach. And so my wife and I and, you know, a whole group of friends would always come out to the lake and hang out on the weekends. That's how we met Pat. because Pat and his sister both grew up with Dealey on the lake. And so it's sort of like Crooked Lake brought us all together there.
Yeah.
And just continue to build that those relationships over, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years, something like that. And there was a, so I have a another friend, he was a previous owner, but had to back out for some personal reasons about a year ago. But he talked to me, if, gosh, 4 years ago, probably was,
at least.
He lives where I do, in Lakeland, Florida, and Delia and Pat are in Lake Wales. But we were talking one day, like how I'd love to get into some sort of ag business. My day job is production, video and photo production. I own a production company in Lakeland. We have a studio, and but we do a ton of food photography and food video. And so I'm around food. Dealey's in the ag business. There's a lot of ag business here in Florida. And so I've grown up around that. Where I grew up in Plant City, which is about another 30 minutes further west, is the strawberry capital of the world. So it's just always surrounded by ag, but I, my family or nor myself were involved in that. But it was a an industry I had an interest in wanting to figure out some way in the future to get into it. But I don't own any land. I don't have a tractor, right? So how was I going to get into the ag business? So one day I'm talking with my buddy in Lakeland, and we're talking about mushrooms. And I was clueless to how you grow mushrooms, right? And we started going down the path, researching it, and like, this is what we need to do. But, you know, months go by, we didn't do anything. Then randomly, Pat, his wife, his brother-in-law and sister came to town, and we were all having beers one night. And I don't know who brought it up. Somebody brought it up, like, what do you think about growing mushrooms? Yeah. And maybe I might have said it, and then Ryan and Patrick look at each other, and they're like, that's crazy. We were just talking about this.
We were talking about bees. Ryan and I, a mutual friend, my brother-in-law, mutual friend, actually, of Dealey and Jesse, which kind of introduced me to them, probably both. Well, Dealey and I have known each other longer than that, but they're good friends, and we were talking about bees. He was talking about trying to put a bee operation in, and then that's kind of when I had just happened to be listening to a Rogan podcast with Paul Stamets.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at that time, Stamets was talking something about bees as well. But I was, and Neil, you and I kind of, I know we talked before, we kind of share that interest of, you know, Paul Stamets kind of brought it to the, you know, this whole idea of kind of to the forefront. And then that's what I brought up to you.
Yeah. And then
and you were listening to it, and it just and kind of.
I feel like, and don't quote me or Ryan, his brother-in-law, don't quote me on this if you're listening to this, but I want to say Ryan's like, I'll push all my grows and grow mushrooms right now.
We're going to inject, we injected, we experimented injecting these big rolls of hay that get, you know, basically they're for all the cows, you know, they've got all the grass out there and they bale it or whatnot. I know nothing about that, but I knew about basically inoculating straws and different kinds of substrates. So we tried to inoculate a bunch of hay out there thinking that you could have some kind of outdoor thing. Obviously, that quickly ended when we realized that temperature was not on our side.
Yeah.
Obviously, humidity brought us to that idea. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's so I think that night, you know, we continued the conversation there and we're like, well, let's do it. Let's start a mushroom company. What are we going to call it? And we're like, how about Florida Mushroom Company? Nobody grows mushrooms in Florida. Let's be the Florida Mushroom Company. And I think that night I got on GoDaddy and bought Florida Mushroom Company, FL Mushroom Company. I bought like all of them. And then, I don't know, it took another 6 months to a year. Just we all have day jobs. We have families. This is like my third job. You know, I, right. The production business. And I have a little outdoor company. And then my wife's like, are you crazy? You know, you're going to get into something else. I'm like, yes, but this is different. So it's not work. You know, it's fun. It takes my brain to a different part of, or my mind to a different part of my brain, I should say. But
sure.
So there's a lot in between that,
right,
of just developing a company, right? Agreements, consultants, tons of research. Where are we going to do this? What do we need to do this? What type of material, supplies, et cetera, and so forth. Okay, once we get this built, how are we going to sell them? You know, how are we going to market them? What, you know, just all of the pieces to that that puzzle started becoming reality. And the great thing about it was our team, and our team has changed twice, I guess. And now Dealey's come on board recently, or in the last year and a half, which was a great asset. I think we talked about him being a part of it from the beginning.
Right. Well, and Ryan had mentioned to me, and maybe it's a good time, Dealey, you there with us, Dealey? We can flip to you, you know, you can share your interest in it, but it was kind of a Ryan, once again, my brother-in-law, we were fishing. And at one point in time, he was saying, you know, there was some cooler space, and Dealey works in that kind of area, had the cooler space, and we just kind of started talking. And then Dealey and I have known each other, like I said, for pretty much, I mean, shoot, we played soccer way back in the day. But Dealey, I don't know, but you probably remember, like, when we've been trying to experiment with hydroponics and stuff inside of the warehouse that we're growing in. And so from, you know, we've always kind of just peered, and I've always been interested in agriculture. Like Jesse said, I don't have any influence in it, or, you know, my family, or I haven't been working in it, but it's always been a interest. And then so reach out to Dealey, and then
And Pat tells me, like, hey, Ryan said Dealey might be interested, and I reached out to him, and he is. I'm like, and Pat's like, what do you think about that? I'm like, what do you mean, what do I think about that? I think that's perfect. I love Dealey, you know, like, he's a perfect asset to this team. And so now we got Dealey, which is wonderful.
So Dealey.
And really, but, you know, in that 2 or 3 year period before, or 2 year period before we where we are now, or Dealey's on board, we weren't really doing anything.
Right.
I mean, we were still trying to figure out how to.
We were experimenting. We were experimenting with substrates, and we were inoculating, you know, we were doing things to create a proof of concept, but we had not gotten, I would say, to the aha moment in which it was like, how do we, and at that time, I would say, integrate into the existing mushroom business. And then I'll say, I'll flip to Dealey. Dealey introduced kind of the idea of how do you vertically integrate into an existing industry, so to speak. And then so it just kind of converged at that point in time. And it wasn't that we, I won't say we were on the wrong path towards it. We just had no idea what the path was or how it looks in the sense of how do you approach this business, and what level do you actually have an ability to be a part of it.
Right. Economically, efficiently, and profitably.
Process.
You know, like, how do we align all those three things? Like, we don't have millions of dollars to inject into this. Do we need an investor or not?
Right.
Do we need to, you know, build this ourselves, do this somewhere, you know, just what is that process?
Right. But, and the thought was we were going to do, you know, our minds told us we're going to do everything from start to finish. And it just doesn't appear. And Neil, obviously, we met at the Mushroom Festival, which I did not, you know, we learned about Kennett Square and you know, just, you know, more of the more intricate parts of the mushroom business and where it originated from and what, where it's really being operated domestically, and even what is the mushrooms that we're buying. You know, it appears that, and these are not hard numbers, but it looks like the most majority, 80 to 90% of most of the mushrooms sold in the market are your Portobello's, Cremini, you know, more ones that are grown out of that manure substrate, whereas the gourmet appears to be a much, much smaller. And then obviously when we get into like what you do and the medicinal and the more foraged mushrooms, that seems to be even smaller, but they seem to have the most bang, you know, they seem to really have a lot of value. And why are they not more in the mainstream? You know, why are they not, you know, why is it that a Portobello and a White Button and a Cremini is, you know, the one that you see in the grocery stores? And, you know, that's what we're trying to accomplish, or the question we've asked.
Dealey, let's let you talk because we're talking too much. Give your historical, story of how this began.
Beyond, I think y'all touched on it all, but like, I mean, the
you from said where I jumped much.
In, from where I jumped in, I mean, y'all have been working on the project for a long time, and it was time to commercialize, I guess. And it was like, how do we bring this to the table? Where do we start? And that's probably been a year and a half or 2 years in the making, really. And it's been a whirlwind to get to this point, but it's been a lot of fun. And like what Pat was just touching on, you know, it seems to be an underutilized, underserved market where there's a world of better, like more than one definition of the term, but like better mushrooms out there for general health and general consumption that we're looking to purvey. In a quick snapshot, if that makes sense, fellas.
Yeah. I love it. I love it.
Yeah, very cool. I guess a few things. One, yes, Florida is not very well known for its mushroom cultivation. I think you have to have a lot of conviction to kind of get into the industry, provided where you guys are. So, yeah, my first question is, yeah, you mentioned there's a lot of agriculture in Florida, right? You could have just went and grown strawberries or citrus. So why mushrooms? What caught your guys' fascination?
You want me to start again?
Ely, whoever. Yeah.
I could jump on. So like in Florida right now, commercial ag typically took big equipment, big land, lots of capital. And the idea of mushrooms is it's a niche. It's a fascinating underserved niche. So like it's probably the next superfood. There seems to be a trend that way. So whether it's for fresh, ready to eat, or powderized, or the tinctures and things, there's a whole world of opportunities that haven't been served yet.
Yeah, to say the least. So I think I say this on almost every show, but there's actually a professional technical term for what you're describing, this increased popularity of mushrooms, and it's actually called the shroom boom.
The shroom boom, that's right. Heard that. Well, I got hooked on it too, and for me it was, I didn't know anything about mushrooms, right? It just seemed like an untapped market. I have an entrepreneurial mind. I don't know anything about ag, but I was like, I could see the shroom boom beginning, and I like mushrooms, but I mean, I'm telling you, as soon as it started from the first meeting and the name, I was hooked. And the more I learned about it, the more I researched about it, and I still don't know. I'm probably the least knowledgeable out of the three, definitely about mushrooms in general. But it is just fascinating. Every day that I learn something new about mushrooms, it's like, I got to be in this business. This product is amazing.
Right.
So.
Yeah, 100%. And when you guys were kind of explaining how, you guys were hanging out, you guys are all friends, and like, you're like, oh, here's this thing about mushrooms. And then the other two were like, oh, we were just talking about mushrooms, another term for that is saying, amidst the shroom boom, you get inoculated, right? So like the same way we inoculate spores into
stone substrate. Date theory, right? McKenna's stone date theory that it's,
Yeah. Everyone gets inoculated and then the fascination grows. And it's a funny thing. And I could resonate with that story a lot too, because mushrooms and foraging and making tinctures were just something that, was like a hobby or like a deep interest that I had. And I would make like my turkey tail tincture and I'd bring it into work. And my coworkers would see me like dropping stuff into my mouth and like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, like this helps with X, Y, and Z. And they're like, oh, let me get some of that. And, we all started, I started just like passing around the office. And then I think one day I was talking my coworker's ear off about mushrooms and she was just like, I think this is what you need to do with your life. And I didn't even think of it. I was like, oh, wow. Yeah. I always wanted to start something. Let me try this. So it's funny how it finds you kind of,
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's been like I said, it's been a ton of fun.
It really has.
It's a new world, which is cool because there are a lot of people that know a lot about it, but most people don't. So they're fascinated. Mm-hmm. They're fascinated to hear what we learn every day.
Yeah. And you guys were talking about too, how, when people think of mushrooms, they think of white button mushrooms, Grameenii, right. Portobello, right? Those are kind of the standard. Right. But I can distinctly remember like the first time I ate a wild mushroom Actually, I think the first time I tried a mushroom that wasn't one of those, I was living in New York City and I went to the farmer's market in Union Square and there was this guy growing oyster mushrooms. He had a clever name. I think it was like Blue Oyster Cultivation, right? And it was these yellow oyster mushrooms, and I was so fascinated. I was like, I've never seen anything like that before. So yeah, I bought a bunch and cooked them up when I got home, and it was like, oh my God, like I didn't realize mushrooms can be so much more. So I think everyone's starting to realize that. And now when I go to the grocery store, there's not just those button mushrooms, but I see maitake and I see oyster and king trumpet. Amidst the shroom boom, you know, the variety is growing. So in that vein, when you guys decided, okay, yes, we want to grow mushrooms, you know, what were some of the mushrooms that you guys have tasted that really moved you and decided, you know, this is what we want to grow? Or do you want to just grow white button mushrooms like everyone else?
No, I would say we do not want to grow white buttons.
Right.
We definitely want to stay in that gourmet world.
Yeah.
I'm going to let the shroom master talk about that, because in my mind, it was just what's gourmet and what's profitable.
Right. And we learned this as we've been going. So it's not something that we can say inherently we were all looking at. If we've eaten mushrooms, most likely we've eaten a white button.
We advertise.
Right. We got new stickers. But, you know, I would say that something like when you're saying that, in the vein of that, being able to see what you can do with a lion's mane or a king oyster, as far as taking away from, and I don't want to disparage where we are from here in Polk County, Florida, because we're very proud of it. But
yeah,
it's a very, and I had one of our customers recently, one of our like small produce vendors, like expressed to me that it's a meat and potatoes kind of area, meaning, you know, introducing maitake and lion's mane and king oyster, as great as they are, the only way that they probably ever heard of it is probably through osmosis, through the shroom boom, you know what I mean? Through hearing it or reading it. But beyond that, there's really not a whole lot of knowledge on it, or at least I haven't come
across. Or at a fancy restaurant, and you don't even know, but you just assume it's going to be delicious.
Correct.
Because it's from some awesome chef.
Right. But even a lot of that still is in the vein around here of the cremini, I've noticed, and the portobello, which probably is more driven by price and availability and things of that nature that most produce are subject to, which Dealey can speak to better. But all that being said, taking a lion's mane and learning that you can pull it apart and it becomes somewhat of a shredded thing. You know, you can put barbecue sauce on it. You can make a crab cake out of it, if you will. Being able to take a king oyster and grate it on a cheese grater, and it becomes, or put it in a food processor, now it becomes kind of like a rice or a risotto or whatever you want to call it. Or knowing that you can go these different angles with those particular mushrooms, and then, because there's not a tremendous amount of flavor in them, if we're, you know, I don't detect it, but you can flavor it, and then realizing that you can be doing that, and then introducing, you know, a complete protein into your meal, that to me is fascinating, right? That to me shows, okay, there's another space we can go that's beneficial. And then it becomes an idea of education, you know, basically us learning and then trying to figure out how to bring that into the market, which is, I'll flip back to you, Jesse, kind of where it, where it plays.
Well, so, and in that world, you know, like I mentioned earlier, doing production and predominantly food production, right? Meaning food photos, food video. We do a ton of recipe development, recipe videos, cooking videos, stuff. And the question we always get, so this is kind of twofold in my mind here of the direction where we need to go in educating the customer. But there are unique ways, like Patrick just mentioned, to process and cook these mushrooms that are just now becoming popular, right? Mm-hmm. The lion's mane.
No.
Well, king oyster has been pretty popular, but
right.
Anyway, you know, as a meat substitute or however you describe, right? Mm-hmm. So, but also in my mind, you can just cut these up and use mushrooms just how you would any other mushroom, right? You may not, it may not add flavor. Maybe it does. Right. It adds that umami flavor. But it's still adding protein to something. So when my mother asked me, how do I cook a king oyster? I said, just chop it, shred it, cut it, slice it, whatever you want, and put it in anything you would put a white button or portobello or baby bell or whatever. And so then she started doing it. And I said, not only do I feel, and you'll find out that it's more tender, it tastes better, it cooks better, but it's also healthier, you know, so why not? You know, and so there, so part of our plan is to teach that side of it. Don't be scared of these. You can add them to anything. And it's just adding health benefits and probably more flavor and texture in the long run. But on the other side of that too, we are going to produce, we've got chefs working on developing recipes, and we want to video or photo and create recipe cards and provide information to people on how to prepare these. Because a lot of people do want to go get outside of the normal recipe that they would use White Buttons or Bella's for, and they want to try some of these gourmet recipes that they've seen in restaurants. And they're just, it's weird how they're just, I don't know, how do I cook this? Well, you could, I don't want to sound mean, but I'm like, just Google it. There's tons, sure. There's tons of recipes. For YouTube,
but, yeah, they're on there.
But for some reason, everybody asks us that. And I won't say just Google it. And so in my mind, it's like, okay, we need to provide some of this information.
That's our business.
You know, so let's start. And that's right up my alley on the day job side. Let's create some recipes. Let's make some videos. Let's start pumping out the information on how to cook a gourmet meal easily at home with these types of mushrooms.
Yeah, very interesting what you said there. You know, education is the keystone of, you know, the mushroom industry in general. And I think that's because, you know, here in the US, we're kind of like this mycophobic society.
Yep.
Right. Yes. You know, all we know is like, yeah, the white butt mushroom, the portobello, those are safe. Everything else is like, oh, it's dangerous, it's poisonous, don't eat it, right? You know, for a good reason. But it's kind of ironic that like here in the United States, almost throughout the whole continent, we have such mycological diversity, right? There's so hundreds of thousands of different species and so many edible, but we don't utilize them. Whereas you look at some other cultures like in Eastern Europe, they're very mycophilic, right? A lot of times when I go out foraging here, the other people that I see foraging, they have an accent. They're from, you know, Russia, Poland, you know, Germany. And they're like, oh yeah, we grew up doing this. Or they're from Italy, right? Yeah. Like me and my grandpa, we used to go out and get the porcini mushrooms or chanterelles. And I'm like, oh man, that's fascinating, because I don't know anybody here that I've met that like kind of grew up doing this with their parents. It's usually like, this is something they developed over time. So you know, educating people, it's almost like a re-education. We kind of lost that, you know.
Lost knowledge almost.
Yeah. But, you know, as you were talking about, you know, grating the king trumpet into this like rice risotto, I think I wrote that down, because I cooked a lot of mushrooms. I never
That's
heard
how about. I got my wife to eat it. And, you know, not to put her on the spot, but when I, you know, people have this thing, and I think you stated it pretty accurately, like a phobia, you know what I mean? Or a preconceived notion of what, you know, mushrooms are, you know, one way or the other, and I like them or I don't. And so my wife, you know, wasn't against it, totally supports our company and what I do, but it was, you know, I'm not going to eat those. So I don't care how many you grow or what you do, you're, you know, good for you. And one night I, you know, and it was just through, you know, education, like you said, Google, YouTube, you know, I saw a chef doing that, and, you know, I tried it and I took it, and I realized through experiment, I love to experiment. So to me, it became an experiment, and I saw, wow, I can put a couple cups of water on this, and now I all of a sudden have, you know, I have rice, and then, well, I have ingredients, and I've even experimented with cheese, and, you know, cause it almost could be a grit. And regardless, I made,
do you know what grits are?
Like a grit.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I've been to the South. I've had many a grits.
But anyways, well, no, it was like the actual food.
Yeah. But anyways, it became an accompaniment with, you know, filet mignon or some steak I was cooking or whatever. But it was genuine. You know, it was, I could tell that it wasn't, hey, you know, honey, I just want to say I like this because I want to support your business. But it was a legitimate thing. So, you know, it just leads, that's what it seems like this whole mushroom thing is this opening into, every it seems like every time we turn around a corner, there's 1700 other corners to turn around, in a sense, that are options or interests, or, you know, wait, this business, in which, honestly, Neil, you know, being at the Mushroom Festival, which, shout out, that was incredible. As you know, I was recommended to go there, and that's where I met you, and you know, that's what kind of leads us into also the more medicinal and the extraction process. And then, so getting to meet you, and then as I've kind of looked at what you're doing, I only understand it on a small level. It's incredibly interesting that you're able to forge these products and bring that whole basically forgotten knowledge back into what I perceive as, you know, bring it back into the mainstream, you know, bring it into common knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's definitely been the goal since day one. And, oh, sorry, Dealey, did you want to jump in?
No, y'all got it.
Okay. Yeah. but, yeah, kind of since day one, you know, I always thought, you know, I actually, before I started my company, I worked in the supplement industry. I worked for a couple of different health and wellness companies, and my job was to source ingredients to make supplements, you know, from all over the world. So when it came to, you know, mushrooms, I saw that, okay, well, it seems 90% of all the mushroom ingredients that go into supplements come overseas from Asia, right? And knowing what I knew about mycology in the US, I just thought it was funny. I was like, huh, like, why are we getting it from over there when it's here? I mean, whether, you know, you can wild forage it. I mean, you don't even have to grow it. It's just there, you know, just go when it's in season and go pick it, and there's plenty of it. Or, you know, why not get your own grow lab here? You can culture wild strains from the forest, and like, why don't we get this thing going here? So when I kind of realized that, I saw an opportunity. I was like, oh, like, I want to make a mushroom extract brand that is 100%, you know, locally supported and based, and nothing comes from overseas, and we have a low carbon footprint, and we're working with nature, not against it. So that's kind of been, you know, our ethos since day one.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, go
domestic value seems to have a lot of, right? You know, ideally kind of bring you in, like, to keep the agriculture here, not for any other reason other than that it's just such a specific product, and it needs to be, you know, harvested quickly, you know, for its optimal value, right? And then ideally, like, and then integrating it into the actual agricultural industrial processes of a local area.
Yeah. And two, you know, I think especially in our country, like, you know, we're always classified as like a consumer. We're just an animal or an organism that's constantly consuming, right? But we're kind of becoming aware of that. So, you know, people are kind of like, you know, they double take before they buy something. They're like, oh, like, yeah, this is great, but like, what's the impact this will have on, you know, local, domestic, international environment if I buy it, right? So I think mushrooms kind of outlines that very beautifully, because yeah, one, with, you know, mushroom products, like, why would I want to get it overseas when I can get it here, right? It's more sustainable. I'm supporting, you know, a local economy. I think people really have that desire. And then two, you know, there's also in the past, I want to say like 20 years, there's kind of this shift as like, you know, food isn't just food, you know, it can also be medicine, right? So that's why we see like a real big uptick in like people wanting to eat plant-based. Or people want to eat organic. If people eat meat, they want to eat grass-fed or raised without antibiotics, because we're starting to really see the medicinal value of what we put into our body. And Pat, I think you touched on it a little bit before, but like, yeah, mushrooms being a complete protein, I mean, they just have so many macronutrients, right? They have fat, they have carbs, they have protein, but phytochemically or mycochemically, there's so many medicinal nutrients in there that do so much more for your body, right? So like, just to outline a few, when you eat mushrooms, mushrooms are basically made out of this macro compound called polysaccharides. And within the polysaccharides, you have beta glucans. And they are these medicinal compounds that like we call it a module. They modulate your immune system, and that's just a fancy term for they kind of turn your immune system like a radio dial. So like if you're sick with the flu, you know, your immune system, if it were radio, it's tuned down out of frequency, right? So these beta glucans help tune it back up to get you back to where you need to be. But also, if you have some sort of autoimmune condition, your radio frequency is tuned too much up out of frequency. So it can help modulate you back down. So there's this kind of fungal intelligence, this greater intelligence. I don't know if it comes from fungi or from the universe, whatever you want to call it. But it's actually kind of regulating our bodies. And I think people, when they discover that, they think that's so beautiful. And it kind of reconnects you to this, oh, wow, like, you know, I can put things in my body that help me, you know. And for a lot of people too that like deal with chronic disease and they're on medication, just adding these you know, mushrooms into their diet, whether they eat it or take an extract or a tincture, it's something they can do to kind of help their condition, ease their symptoms, if not help eliminate them. So I think, yeah, mushrooms are one of, you know, these topics that help kind of alleviate people's deep desires to be more local and to have more medicine. So I don't know if you guys view mushrooms the same way, but that was a long rant.
I think we do. I mean, and I'm speaking for all of us, but I think it we didn't know that, you know, mm-hmm. never knew that, but now we know that, and it's proven and it's obvious, and we're in it now, so we're influxed with that information. So, but it doesn't feel over powering. It's like, oh yeah, all this new information we're getting is like, that makes sense. Oh yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, oh yeah. You know, and it's amazing. It's amazing that we didn't know this. It kind of sucks that we didn't know this before.
Right.
It's great from a business perspective.
Right.
Granted, but because it is a true boom, but outside of that, you know, and it's also good for the world, you know, for humankind. Like, this is great to see natural stuff coming back, being popular, mm-hmm. becoming more of a part of our diet in every form of food, I think. And mushrooms is I think helping push that.
And 100%. They're close to, it seems to recycle itself, you know, and on an ecological level, ideally you could speak more of that. It just there's this possibility of being able to even, you know, we've just thrown ideas out there about, you know, because here in Florida we have citrus industry.
The whole byproduct side of mushrooms, right? I guess would be this topic.
Spent blocks, you know. So ideally you can give a little bit more insight into the citrus industry, but we've been hit with what's called greening, and I know nothing about it, but it seems to be hurting the citrus industry. But it seems like even, and Neil, as you know, we share the common interest of Paul Stamets, his micro restoration theories or whatnot about being able to reintroduce, you know, spent blocks of beneficial mycelium back into areas that may have been depleted from, for whatever reason, and lost the mycelium mat that rests underneath it, and then thus lost their kind of biodefense system against different parasites and things, which, you know, greening is. And so Delia and I have had those kind of conversations, and, you know, nothing beyond more just ideating, but it seems like there is some, if in fact you can micro restore an area, there could be a potential to help on a very large scale. And Delia, you know, give a little more insight on that.
Yeah.
No, I mean, so like citrus greening is based on bacterial disease. It's killing citrus trees throughout the state in a rapid way at this point. And as far as what we know about like the micro restoration and the utilization use of the byproducts, even from the mushrooms, I mean, we're at the tip of the iceberg. We're learning. I mean, we're learning as fast as we can, but you know, what all can we do? Well, at this point, it seems like opportunities are endless, but as far as the effects and what they can, you know, the benefits, we're still learning. So, but I mean,
it's what? Go ahead.
No, it's intriguing though. I mean, because kind of go back to the human benefit is, you know, we are what we eat. There's a benefit there. Similarly, in plants, I mean, they are what they eat. So, you know, good nutrition, good symbiotic relationships are important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is fast. That whole world is completely fascinating to me. And that with the whole mycelium thing, I mean, and what it can do in agriculture, what it can do, packaging, you know, products, how mycelium can change humankind moving forward too, mm-hmm. in every area.
And help restore areas that have been depleted.
Yeah, it's, that's
in carbon. Depleted.
That's when my mind just goes,
yeah,
I'm done.
And Neil, anything you understand about that? We kind of bring it in, you know, I bring it up because it's just something interesting we talk about, not necessarily exactly where the business is going, but, you know, obviously in a business, we have spent blocks, you know, we have beneficial mycelium blocks that have purpose. They get repurposed a lot of times for turf building and things, but if they could be reintroduced into an ecologically beneficial ecosystem, you know, that has value for business, but it has a greater value for other aspects of agriculture, right? You
know, then our mushroom, or then our business is like a mushroom.
It's like a mushroom.
It just keeps helping.
But anyways, yeah.
It's a big tangent there. Sorry.
No, it was great.
We will digress fast.
Yeah. That's another thing is like the benefits to an ecosystem. The potential with mushrooms is so great. I'm sure a lot of people listening to this are very familiar with Paul Stamets's work and how he's talked about how, you know, you can, grow specific mushroom mycelium, which is the root structure of mushrooms, right? The greater living organism. You can grow it in a lab setting and kind of train it to consume and eat and break down petroleum particles, right? So you can use it to help clean up oil spills. Pat, I think you touched upon his work with bees, where a lot of bee cultivators are having a problem where, you know, one day they'll go and they'll feed their beehives and everything's fine. And then literally within 24 hours, like 80% of the hive is completely dead. And, you know, it's happening all around the country, all around the world.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they discovered was that because we are clear cutting certain ecosystems and destroying some ecosystems, you destroy the fungi that are associated with them. And the bees, when they go out and they fly to pollinate, they stop at these trees that have certain fungi in them to get their basically antibiotics, right? Mm-hmm. They eat the mycelium or the fruiting body from those mushrooms, and that protects their bodies. Mm-hmm. But when they don't have that, then they started getting this virus called the deforming wing virus, where basically like their wings fall off and they die. With Paul Stamets' work, they found that if they gave them like a, you know, 10 time diluted extract of reishi or I think red belted polypore, it was,
yeah,
you know, they were just healing almost like instantly. So,
and is that, and I was watching your thing, not to, you know, I'm interrupting, but like the oxygen, is that really, and I do not, I'm asking, so as trying to learn, like it's bringing greater amounts of oxygen to the brain, to the heart, to the whole system. I mean, is that kind of the
immunity part?
Yeah. When we say immunity, like what is, and that, you know, what does that mean in your perception of it? You know, and I know you break it down in some of your videos, which is great. Like, and that's where I pull like the oxygen levels being increased to your heart and brain. But, you know, what is that? You know, what is really happening there for the immunity boost?
Yeah, that's a good question. So kind of like, yeah, what I mentioned before with like the beta glucans and the polysaccharides, them kind of like fine tuning your immune system as a radio, right? Mm-hmm. That process will just like kind of, you know, make your immune system work faster and stronger, right? And you get that from eating mushrooms. Your stomach can break down those components really easily. If you make a tea, you can also get them, right? But like, this is a good example, and I explained this to a lot of people at the Mushroom Festival in Kennett Square, which I want to circle back on it in after this. But with lion's mane, this is a great example. Lion's mane has a lot of those, you know, immune modulating properties. If you eat it, you'll get it. But a lot of times people want to eat lion's mane for its cognitive benefits, right? So with we categorize, the beta glucan stuff, that's immune modulating. but the cognitive aspect, we'll call that adaptogenic properties, right? So to get those adaptogenic properties, your body doesn't do a good job of breaking them down in the stomach. So what people do is they extract the properties from the mushroom fruiting body with organic alcohol, or, you know, as strong as like an ethanol, like a 190 proof. And that helps pull out all of those different acids and antioxidants and terpenes. These are the things that are very medicinal and adaptogenic, and will help improve your brain health. So you were talking about increasing oxygen uptake in the blood and brain and the heart. And that happens from certain compounds called terpenes and triterpenoids. So like you'll find that in reishi mushrooms, and you'll find that in cordyceps. And, you know, those mushrooms are kind of advertised as, oh, they'll help with energy and endurance, stamina, you know, if you're someone who's like physically active. Or with reishi, it helps promote better sleep, calm and relaxation. And that's because these compounds are kind of like natural steroids. And what they do is they just help your blood uptake more oxygen. And right, your blood goes everywhere in your body. So that means your heart has more oxygen, so it's pumping more efficiently. Your brain has more oxygen, so its cognitive performance is better. And that can just help your body adapt to situations much better, because it's like having more fuel in the tank, right? Your car drives better when it has a full tank, or when it's, you know, less than a quarter, right? You feel
it's optimal.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Which is important. Like, so it's not like you're giving a medicine, you know, and I think that's one thing everybody's looking, I don't want to generalize, but, you know, okay, this is a solution for something. It's just more of a mentality of keeping the car running at its optimal level, mm-hmm. and it will respond better. And kind of like with the trees, you know, the idea is, you know, if the trees had the most optimal
environment
and whatnot, then they might be able to be better to combat against greening, to actually, you know, not saying cure it or eradicate it, but they can coincide.
They can live longer, produce more fruit.
Right.
Be healthier.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I think there's statistics that says like about 90% of all root structures in trees and plants are covered in mushroom mycelium.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I meant to say before too is that you know, I always say we live in a very like highly competitive environment, right? Due to capitalism, right? We're always competing for a dollar, or we're competing for, you know, space, or we're competing for whatever it is, right? The best position at work, you know. So we kind of live in this, you know, very individualistic society. But when you start to learn about mushrooms, and especially mycelium, what we're kind of talking about here, you start to see how much nature grows in cooperation, right? Myceliums are connecting trees. They're helping them share water and food and medicines, and kind of help regulate the greater forest. And that's all happening in cooperation. You know, I think sometimes we look at the forest and all we see is like chaos, but that's because like, we live in chaos. But if we actually start to learn about it, we're like, oh wow, no, it's very much so growing in cooperation. Even when predation is happening, it happens to balance the greater ecosystem. So that's, you know, very refreshing. And when I teach classes locally, that's what I try to outline. So yeah, I mean, I can keep keep going on this forever, but I think we outlined pretty nicely how mushrooms are more than just food. I mean, even if they're just food, I mean, they're great, right?
What do you want to say about Kenneth Square?
Yeah, hey, here we go. I have to.
There you go, yeah. Yeah, Pat, so you and I met. We were vending at the Kenneth Square Mushroom Festival, and you just passed by our booth, and we started chatting, and you know, that's how we got connected. First of all, I just want to say, like, wow, that was such an amazing festival. Like, that was the first time we were a part of it. You know, I think I heard about it before and I didn't really know what to expect, but there were like over 10,000 people that came through, and like, you know, for like, I kind of came unprepared and I was there by myself. Like, my business partner was on vacation. But oh my God, like from 9:30 a.m. to like 5:30 p.m., just nonstop people at our booth, just geeking out about mushrooms. And, you know, I didn't even have a chance to like go walk around and see the rest of the festival, where next year, you know, it's going to be different. But I'm very curious, you know, like, yeah, how did you hear about it? And what was your experience like?
So my experience was awesome. It definitely, you know, I did not really know what to go into. I wasn't sure, as we're learning the mushroom business, you know, it was a fact-finding mission for us, you know, for the business, but I was recommended to go there through partners that we're working with on our production side of the mushrooms, and they're out of that area, and they recommended to come check it out, and you know, they knew we're looking for information and education, and I like to have a lot of fun, and it was a lot of fun. And so things I took from it, and this is just from never going either, so this was my first time going to it. It reminded me, in Lake Wales, we have the Lake Wales Mardi Gras, which is a local festival or whatever, but you get a ton of people. And so obviously, you know, that was a ton of people that were there as well, but it's still that local tent vendor thing. You know, it's kind of, I took from it that there's a long tradition there. Obviously there's a long tradition of cultivating mushrooms. Kind of goes back to the Portobello, Cremini. I saw a lot of that influence. You know, there's people that are getting into the coffee, and that seems really, you know, I took some back with me, and I've been, and I'll say this in just a second, with the cordyceps and the lion's mane, put it in the coffee, it's good. The coffee, it works, but it's not incredibly tasteful, you know, if you're looking for coffee. I just mean that humbly, like, and I'm no coffee aficionado, but, you know, I like to read a lot off of other people. So, and my wife gets to be an experiment a lot of times, so she's pretty blunt with her opinion. And so coffees, when we got to you, saw some artists, Rob. So there's an artist, Rob. I don't know if you met him or not. He was kind of close to your booth. He was kind of more in that culture of what we're talking about with the mushrooms and the medicinal side of it. And then I don't know, you and I met, and you had the sweet tea, and you were offering a sample of that. I had only drank one small cup of coffee at the hotel, and I had not eaten anything or consumed anything at all. I think I met you around 10 o'clock. You tinctured cordyceps and lion's mane into a sweet tea. And I was leaving. I actually had to leave shortly after that. I had to catch a flight out of Philly to get home. And I could tell, and I think I expressed this to you when we talked the other day, there was something that was happening there. There was an energy boost. There was, you know, whatever, you know, I don't want to conflate it with, you know, other things like coffee and caffeine and potentially medicines or whatnot that give you energy or whatnot. But there was a noticeable difference that I detected. So that was kind of what led me to, you know, obviously I told Dealey and Jesse, you know, because we had been not necessarily looking for an avenue there, but we're looking for whatever, you know, wherever the mushroom goes, really. And so that's really what brought, you know, kind of brought us together here. And, you know, that's what our interest is in being able to partner and share, you know, what you guys are doing with what we're doing and, you know, bring it to the mainstream.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. That's very refreshing. Whenever we do events, we make a big batch of chaga iced tea, and kind of how we were chatting before about how, you know, with this kind of like mycophobic society, we're afraid of it, and people see, oh, mushroom extracts, oh, I don't know, no, I don't want it to taste like mushrooms. So yeah, we make this big pot of chaga iced tea, which tastes like normal iced tea, but it's actually brewed with chaga mushroom, right? And we let people choose, oh yeah, do you want to try lion's mane, do you want to try cordyceps, do you want to try reishi, and we'll put in the tea for them. And then they try it and they realize, oh, it doesn't change the flavor of the tea. It's right. Nice and light, lemony and sweet. And they're like, oh, yeah, I could do this. Okay, yeah, I'll get a bottle. Yeah, I can do this, right? So, you know, we do that to just kind of, yeah, get open people's minds a little bit. But
it's palatable. It's all about making it palatable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Way to do it.
And yeah, it's always nice to hear you say, oh, yeah, I felt it right away, because that's people's always big question, like, oh, when will I feel it, you know? And, you know, I always try to explain, you know, this is, you know, the nutrients are in it. You take it, you know, it starts to work right away, but, you know, maybe if in 1 to 2 weeks, you start to feel like you have more energy, you're sleeping better, your digestion's improving, you know, that's the telltale sign. But yeah, we get so many people that are like, no, right away, I felt, you know, more this, more that, or, you know, like I didn't have to take Advil this morning for my knee, you know? So yeah, that's always refreshing to hear. So thanks for sharing that. And yeah, just in closing with the Mushroom Fest, wow, it was so incredible. I already can't wait for next year. It was just so cool to see so many people just into mushrooms. So I loved it.
We hope to be there next year too.
Maybe. Yeah, we should get
kids. And so
we should get a booth next to each other next year. That'd be fun.
That would
be. Let's talk. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Thank you, Neil. Yeah, so I want to get a little more on kind of what you guys have down the pipeline with Florida Mushroom Co. So, yeah, curious, let's just start here. What mushrooms are you guys growing right now?
Okay, so currently, like Jesse kind of shared earlier, we're in a little remodel. So the first mushroom that we grew is, when I kind of talk about the proof of concept, was the king oyster. And there was no rhyme or reason. It was, you know, opportunity was there to do it. And it kind of brought us into the process that we saw as a greater business mechanism, you know, for our company. We will be growing, honestly, we're not limiting what we're growing. Our facility that we're remodeling right now should be up and online by the end of October. And right now we anticipate, based on what, you know, the market, our customers, what we're selling, shiitake, we're definitely going to do the oysters, and, you know, go from there. One aspiration we have in the long term is to be able to possibly cultivate local strains like reishi and stuff like that. That's, you know, there, and then potentially just, you know, experiment there and see that. But we'll probably see in the beginning, you know, because we want to grow every single strain if possible, but that's just not the reality of growing mushrooms in a building in Central Florida. So shiitake and the oysters, you know, to answer your question, will be probably our first approach. Obviously, lion's mane is something, and the maitake are really, really, as people learn those and they buy them from us and they take them and they figure out what to do with them, they become more popular. And we will, you know, not to, you know, give an actual direction, but we see the business as being able to go in the direction that the demand is saying. So, you know, because it seems to be a fluctuation, you know, as people learn about mushrooms, they eat them, but they don't necessarily, you know, we're not at the point where people are just, you know, constantly eating them in their diet every week, so to speak, you know, once a week or whatnot. So it's kind of hard to calibrate exactly,
yeah,
which species.
I mean,
we want to be operated to be able to do any of them.
Yeah, we're new. I mean, we need to make that clear and honest. I mean, it's like,
yeah, 100%.
Sure, our business has been formed for 3 years, but we didn't do anything until a year ago,
right?
You know, meaning grow anything. So, and that was a huge fire under our butts to like, oh, we can do this. This is amazing, and that's props to Pat for spearheading that, you know, and just doing it, and it worked, and we're like, oh my gosh, okay, well then let's do it, you know. And so we're there. We're gonna, like he said, have this. We've got a much better setup happening from the first time. Obviously, it's crazy hot in Florida, so we need to be able to control that during the summer months, like right now. Which we're working on. We're almost there. And when we get that done, start doing these other mushrooms.
It's probably important to say too that, you know, we are partnered and working with our, what I like to call the mother farm out of Kennett. So we have, you know, private partners that we're working with that will be utilizing substrate. One thing I noticed, and that we all noticed collectively, was if you want to really be able to bring fresh U.S. domestic mushrooms to the market, you probably, if you think you're going to create that from the beginning till the end, you know, you really have to do a little bit more homework, because it doesn't work that way. There's great companies that are doing that. They have large, you know, bandwidth. They're already in, they're doing it. So kind of integrating into the business, is really where we're at too. So we're utilizing like the mushrooms that we are providing to the public. We are growing them, and we are also providing them through our mother farm. So they grow the mushrooms. They're the same mushroom we'll be growing with our with their substrates in a sense. So we saw that as a better path into the industry, because otherwise you can have all the great aspirations of the world. You can grow the best mushroom you've ever had, but there is zero chance that you're going to be able to actually feed a market on a residual basis. If you want to expand and have, you know, all different kinds of species and naturally, you know, get into extracts.
And I think at the other side, you touched on it briefly, but we have a lot of like Florida strands, I guess, you know, that are different than other strands in other states. And I think it's a very cool idea to figure out how to reproduce that and have the Florida strand of a certain mushroom. And who knows if it has different, or, I mean, you might know, but like is it a different health benefit, or is it a different style, or does it taste different because of the climate? And that's something, you know, we've all talked about exploring, getting more into the science behind that side of like the reishi that grows in Florida compared to the reishi that grows somewhere else.
Yeah. And Neil, you can speak to that. One thing I found interesting in one of your YouTubes was that, you know, it's, and I'm you know, not quoting you in a sense, but like it says that like mushrooms that are foraged wildly seem to have a 5-to-1 as far as potency or medicinal value or whatever that's calibrated. So that's kind of like the customer just says, that's interesting to us, because it's clear that mushroom breathes oxygen like we are. It's not like the trees and the plants, you know, it seems to have a different symbiotic nature in our entire ecosystem. So clearly humans, we change given temperate region, you know, climate, everything. So is the mushroom, is it not? And obviously it's, you know, I believe, obviously, I think in we're asking, but it seems like it probably does have a little difference depending on where you're at on the earth as to what kind of mushroom is produced there. Because it seems like there, even if you have one certain species of a certain thing, there could be all these derivatives that make it a little bit different than the other in a sense. But I asked
that question. To answer your question, we're our goal, I guess, or where we're going, is to keep learning.
Yeah, well said.
Get as many mushrooms to as many people that want them.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, my legs are hurting.
My crickety chair. Oh, we got the crickety chair.
Yeah, and if I've been hearing you guys correctly too, I think like your biggest endeavor is you guys are in Florida and you basically want to bring mushrooms to your, you know, immediate local communities and your state, right? Like, you're not like, we're growing in Florida, we want to send them to California, maybe sometime down in the future, but you want your immediate community to benefit from all mushrooms have to offer.
Exactly. We want to grow them, harvest them, and take them to your doorstep or your business, you know, within the same day or next day.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's so cool because, people want to eat locally, right? So if I'm in Florida, like, I don't want to get my mushrooms from Maine, you know, or from the Midwest, like, especially when I think you guys are filling a gap. And I think so many people are kind of doing this, you know, on whatever scale that they can. But, you know, yeah, maybe like people figure out how to do this with mushrooms and then they do it with something else, you know, like, you know, hydroponics or, you know, with different agricultural vegetables and fruits. And you know, I commend you guys for that. And yeah, I wanted to kind of like pry a little more on like what you guys are when you say you guys are kind of renovating your space. I imagined that one of the first things that were getting renovated was the cooling system, right?
Yes, that's all of it. Yes. I mean, we're in a metal building that we insulated, but now we're insulating it even more, like 4-inch thick insulated panels, and basically creating a room inside of a room.
Yeah, an ecosystem.
An insulated room inside of an insulated room.
Yeah. And then coming up with, you know, business practices, hopefully that will work. You know, we have, you know, I personally, and I speak Fidelia and Jesse about it. And they, you know, we have a big, great giant sun that just peers on Florida 100% all the time. And so there's an ability to have energy there, you know, and there's an ability to adapt that energy into the growing systems. And, you know, if there's a space there where that makes it more economically feasible for us to bring these things to the market locally, as our goal is, then, you know, those are aspects we're seeing
better. Yeah. We have natural springs. We have the Florida aquifer. We have all these cool bits and pieces that I think we can tie into.
Absolutely.
To the growth process.
Yeah. And closed loops. Mm-hmm. Locally, regionally, closed loops as much as possible agriculturally.
Yeah, it's so cool. And yeah, it's so nice to hear you guys talk about this while you're on the ground level. And definitely as you guys grow and when more progress has been made, we want to have you back on the show to hear all about that. That's really cool.
Love it. Absolutely. Well, we appreciate you having us, Neil. Thank you.
Yeah, and before we sign off here, where can everyone find out more about Florida Mushroom Co? Where can they find you?
Sure. You can go to flmushroomco.com. That's just flmushroomco.com. And then you can find us on Instagram, the same tag, flmushroom, or you can search Florida Mushroom Company on Instagram as well. And yeah, we're going to keep, you know, like we said, we're still new, still learning, still working. So be patient with us, but we've got, I think, positive, right, ideas, and we're all in it for the same reasons, which is the right reason, because mushrooms are the way to go. And hopefully we can provide some great stuff for people.
Right on. Yeah. And I'll be sure to include some links to your website and Facebook in the show notes.
Thank you.
And yeah, guys, thanks for chatting all about mushrooms with me today. And yeah, we'll be in touch and can't wait to have you back on in the future.
Awesome. Thanks, Neil.
Thanks, man.
Yep.
See ya. Okay.
Thanks, Neil.
All right, guys, there it is with Florida Mushroom Company. Be sure to check them out at flmushroomco.com. And as always, if you really enjoyed the show, we would love it if you could leave us a rating and review on whatever platform you listen to this on. That will help people find the show and help us grow it out. So I know the holidays are coming up, so just want to wish everyone listening a happy holiday with their loved ones. And we'll be back real soon with some more exciting guests and discussions. Thanks.